Yeah, not mine.
All right.
Welcome to this wonderful spring Sunday. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to talk about God's understanding, knowledge and wisdom. 95% of the lesson will be knowledge, 5% will be wisdom, just unless we get through it faster than I think. So I'll pray, and we'll get started. Lord, thank you for the ability to gather, to learn about who you are, to gather around like-minded people, encourage and edify one another. And I pray that you would sanctify us today, that you would cause us to love you, to wonder about you more, and that we would feel all the more blessed and worshipful by learning who you are, who we are, and in your disposition towards us. And so I pray that you give me the words to say and our hearts. The ability to understand your name, I pray. Amen. All right. God's understanding, knowledge, and wisdom. I was going to say at the outset, this is going to probably prompt questions about God's will, human freedom, like the age-old debate. I'm not going to get into that particularly because it's not, like, we'll talk about it, it'll be mentioned, but my plan isn't to address it head-on. We just don't have the time. Nor do I think it fits under classical theism super well. But if you do have questions, one, we can spend some time maybe at the end talking about it. But also, do a systematic theology Sunday school class with Aaron, and he will flesh that out really, really well. So if you have questions, we can try to work through some of it, but some of it we're just not going to have time, and it is what it is, unfortunately. All right, so starting with knowledge. Does anyone know what, okay, I'll just be on, omniscience or omniscience? This is, people say it both ways. I'm going to say omniscience or omniscience. Anybody know what this means? Break it down for me, possibly.
All knowing. Yeah.
All knowing, that's right. So, yeah, all knowledge. All right. All-knowing. So we can say that God is all-knowing. It's pretty much agreed upon by most people that God is all-knowing to some capacity. The question that we're going to be really focusing on this morning is how, or maybe you could say in what way, does God know all things? So how or in what way does God know all things? There's four ways. We're going to... Not everything falls into these categories super cleanly. You may feel like maybe your understanding is somewhere between them. But just broadly speaking, there are four ways that this has been answered. And we're going to break those down. So the first one is, and if you were here at the very beginning of the class, we mentioned these. So you have open theism, and these are going to ascend in a certain direction. Open theism, classical Arminianism, Molinism, and then classical theism, or also known as evangelical Calvinism. So that's like the four ways that we answer the question, how does God know all things? They all are going to differ specifically on how God knows future things, or if he knows future things. They agree on how God knows things that have happened. He just knows them because they've happened, and he's experienced things like us. They could all say that. So they're specifically going to disagree on the future. So what way he knows the future, or if he knows the future. So that being said, we'll just go ahead and get into them. Feel free to just ask questions at any point. Also, just raise your hand. You don't have to wait till the right moment. All right, the first one is open theism. Does anybody know what open theism states about God's knowledge? Does anybody know? So God does not, he does not know the choices of free people. He does not know. Thank you. He does not know the choices of free people. I'm talking about the future here. But God does have, they will say good, they would say, I will also say that they say, they have good, that God has good projections about the future. So you can think good projections or guesses.
So would they say that he has like good, like a plan based on those good?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, well, I'm actually about to address that. So in this one, you can think of God. We're going to use this analogy as we go through all the four different ones as God as a chess player. Okay, this is going to break down in many different ways, obviously. But I think it'll help. And this is via Lee. So just thank Lee for this great analogy. So to the open theist, God is like an incredible chess player. He knows all of our past and all of our present choices completely. So he's really, really good at guessing what move you're going to make as a free individual. He doesn't know what move you're going to make, but he's really good at guessing because he knows all the things you've done, who you are currently. So he's really good at guessing. So from that plan, he can predict or plan a next move in response to what you do. Now, he doesn't know for sure, but he's really good at guessing. So he's God. He's like the most incredible chess player ever. So he doesn't know. He just has really good guesses, really good projections. Kind of like a really good chess player. They know what people do and what situations, and so they act accordingly. All right. Yeah.
So if you ask someone who, like, do people admit that they're this?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So would they say these things? Like, this is how we believe?
Yes. They would probably use language that makes it a bit more confusing, I think. But that is what they would say, because what they're going to value more than anything is our ability to make free choices. And they want us to have free choices, bar none. And the only way you can have that is a God who just doesn't know what you're going to do. And so he responds accordingly. Any other questions so far about this?
Is that what we live by, the Free Will Baptist Church across from Northside? Do you know if they're...
I would guess that they would not fall here.
Okay.
They would probably fall... This is just a guess. I'm out of that.
Yeah.
Probably closer to the next one. But like I said, I think what happens is, so you have open theism, classical Arminianism, and Molinism. I think people say they're one thing and speak like they're another in every different direction in those categories. So I'm not sure where they would stand. All right, so problems with this view specifically. We're going to look at three different texts, if you guys could read them for me. They're all in Isaiah. So the first one is Isaiah 44, 6 through 8. Isaiah 44, 6 through 8. If somebody has it and would read it, that'd be awesome.
Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. Who is like me? Let him proclaim it. Let him declare and set it before me. Since I appointed an ancient people, let them declare what is to come and what will happen. Fear not, nor be afraid. Have I not told you from of old and declared it? And you are my witnesses. Is there a God beside me? There is no rock. I know not any. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. 45 verses 20 and 21. 45, 20, and 21. If someone could read it.
Assemble yourselves and come. Draw near together, you survivors of the nations. They have no knowledge, who carry about their wooden idols, and keep on praying to a God that cannot save. Declare and present your case. Let them take counsel together. Who told this long ago? Who declared it of old? Was it not I, the Lord? And there is no other God besides me, a righteous God and a Savior. There is none besides me.
All right, thank you. And then 48, just verse 3. 48, verse 3.
I declared the former things long ago, and they went forth from my mouth, and I proclaimed them. Suddenly I acted, and they came to pass.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. So, if we were to sum up these verses, what's being said is God has declared what will happen. And this sets him apart from any other gods that they said that they worshipped and any other thing that is created. It's what makes God God, is that he has declared what will happen. And every time he does do that, it does happen. So, as we look at also the other views, just keep these texts in mind because they're the ones that we're going to reference. But I will say that these texts, I mean, you just can't put together an open theist framework with these texts. You just cannot do it. It does not make sense.
But these are all Old Testament, so I'm asking, I'm not really asking, but I'm asking how to
I would just say,
argue this, because I think some people in this category would say, well, yeah, he was like that, but then in the New Testament, and after Jesus came, it changed.
But that was something that God changed.
Yeah,
But there is New Testament scriptures also that point to it. So do you have any that...
I'm not using any today. I wanted to use these texts because I think what the point that we're seeing here is that this make... Like, they're assigning God a different category altogether. Whereas the open theists want to put God in a category just like us, where we just don't know, we're just guessing about the future. But this is... The text is trying to set him apart in a way that we have to set him apart, and that is he declares things about the future. Yeah, so maybe we'll answer some of those questions as we go through the others.
Hey, Riley.
Yeah.
So just trying to boil this down to the problem they're trying to solve, basically what they're trying to do is satisfy an internal conflict that they have with evil.
That's right.
And the way that they do that is they make God to be reactive rather than an active agent that is the cause. He's now having to put out all these fires to make his plan end the way that he wants it to end.
That's right.
Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. The problem of evil is one that we'll talk about at the end with the last few, because it's the one that the classical theists are going to get accused of and say, you have no way out. Whereas these three, they all have a way out, is what they would say. But that brings up actually the question that I really think really has a doesn't coincide with this is, can God guarantee his ultimate plan will happen in this view? He can't. You cannot guarantee that God will fulfill his ultimate plan for the world. He's going to get close, and you could say he has the best shot, but you can't say that he will. It's impossible to say that. So for one, I just don't think this is how the Bible speaks anywhere. And two, I think it violates, which you mentioned actually, it violates almost every aspect of classical theism we've talked about so far. You have to make several compromises if you want to say this is true. Open theism, bad. That's what you need to get from that one. All right, second one, classical Arminianism. So, yeah, classical Arminianism. So with classical Arminianism, I'll go ahead and say, as we look through this, you may say, I didn't know that's what Arminians believe. I believe this, and I said, I'm an Arminian. What you will see is that 2 and 3, monism, a lot of people say one, mean another. So we'll break it down as we go. But classical Arminianism, the two important things you need to know about this one is, they're going to say God has simple foreknowledge. So God has simple foreknowledge. He foresees the future, and he foresees what people choose to do. But here's the important part I think we need to know about classical Arminianism is he sees the future, but he cannot do anything particularly about the future. All right. So I'm going to put sees, cannot do. So a classical Arminian would say that God, he has simple foreknowledge. So what that means is he foresees through the path of time, the tunnel of time in the future, and he foresees what people choose to do. And so he knows everything that's going to happen, but he cannot do anything about what is going to happen. He just simply knows, simple for an RT, simply knows what will happen. So let's go back to the chess player analogy. In this case, God isn't like a good chess player in that he predicts. Instead, he actually knows the moves that every chess player would make and will make for sure. And so he can plan accordingly so that he always wins and always always carries out his ultimate plan. Since this is the case that he knows every choice that everybody's going to make and everything that will happen, we can say, the classical Arminian can say that God will fulfill his purpose for the world because he can plan accordingly, actually. So put simply, God knows the future. You can almost think of it like this. In the same way that we would know the future if someone told us every detail about the future and we could retain it. So it's in that same way. So if someone told you your whole future, everything about it, and you could retain it perfectly, you would have the same knowledge about your life that maybe God has about your life. He knows every single detail of every single thing looking forward. Yep.
How would they deal with the fact that God could have created an infinite number of worlds or different
we're about to hit that in Molinism because
they would have to deal with the fact that God is creator and he could choose, even within that framework, a world that's going to specifically do what he wants it to do.
That's right. Yeah, we're about to hit that for sure. That exact thing, actually.
That also says, like, he might be all-knowing, but then he's not all-powerful. Like, if he can't.
Yeah, so the classical Arminian, I think that's where some of the problems are going to go, is that a God who can plan and act accordingly perfectly, based on a perfect knowledge, still feels a little powerless if he can't do anything about the future. So problems with this. So one, I don't think the Bible speaks in this way particularly. As seen specifically in the passage we looked at in Isaiah, he says, I declared it from old and it happened. He's not saying I knew that it would happen because it was going to happen. He said, I declared it and then I brought it to come to pass. So God knows, and God knows all things not, this is important, not by observation, which is, I think, how the classical Arminian has to kind of wrestle through this, is he observes through time what is going to happen. But I don't think God knows all things by observation. I think he knows all things because he knows himself. Now, that's a bit confusing. We'll explain that, what that means, when we get to the classical theist position. But I don't think God knows by observation, and that's how we know things. I think he knows things because he knows himself. Which includes certain aspects of who he is, which I don't want to spoil, but we'll get there. And then what we call God's foreknowledge, referring to simple foreknowledge, has to be from our perspective. It can only be from our perspective. God is outside of time. So saying he foreknows things by looking through the tunnel of time, it does put it in a strange category, right? God, time is this thing that is below God. God is outside of it. So to say that he's like looking forward does get a little weird, and just how we wrestle with that. For us, we understand foreknowledge because we look forward in time all the time. So I think what we call God's foreknowledge is only from our perspective. His foreknowledge actually has to be a bit different, because the Bible definitely talks about foreknowledge. So foreknowledge isn't something that's bad or anything like that. But the way that they speak of simple foreknowledge does put a strange category, I think, with God. It has to be much more than just simple foreknowledge. And then as God has been described by the doctrines we laid out in this class, I don't think it fits this model very well. I don't like the idea of God helplessly seeing the future and then just not being able to do anything about it. There's almost in a way, which ironically, there's an open theist who critiques the Arminian in this way. He says, in some way, I'm like moved to pity God, because he knows the future and he has to like live with that. He can't do anything about it. Which is a real weird thing for classical or open theist to say, because they think it's a good thing that God doesn't know the future, because then I don't pity him, because he doesn't know and I don't know. But he says, you know, I actually pity the Arminian God, because he sees the future and he's just really sad about it, is what they would say. I don't think that. So for those reasons, I think there are some issues with the classical Arminian position. Any questions about this?
Are you going to address salvation from these points of view? Because I feel like growing up was either Arminian or Calvinist.
Yeah, so kind of want to and I kind of don't, I'll be honest. So when we get to Molinism, I think what you may have heard growing up, the Arminian position, I think a lot of times actually is more like the Molinist position that we're about to talk about. I think the classical Arminian position is not a very, not what we think as Arminian. We hear like in West Tennessee, just to be fair. Let me go to Molinism maybe. I really don't want to answer it, but I might. We'll see. We'll see. All right, so Molinism. Does anybody know what Molinism is?
Number three.
The next war.
Apparently how we grew up.
Yeah.
Maybe not, actually. But it's not with the language of Molinist, but maybe with the conclusion of Molinist is what I would say. So a Molinist says that God, we're going to use the word possibilities here. It's going to sound weird. Just bear with me for a minute. We'll work through it. God sees the possibilities of the future and works in his plan. So think possibilities, works in his plan. You could also say God knows counterfactuals. That's a word that people use with this. But the one that is like really, really key with Molinists is God has something called middle knowledge. If you think Molinists, think middle knowledge. That is the key thing. God has middle knowledge. All right. What is middle knowledge? That's a good question. And it's confusing. So I'm going to try to give this my best shot, but it is a bit confusing. All right. Middle knowledge is between something theologians call necessary knowledge and free knowledge, which is traditionally theologians have said God has something called necessary knowledge and free knowledge. So in the 1500s, late 1500s, there were some theologians who put middle knowledge between those two things. All right, so let me tell you what necessary knowledge is and free knowledge. So God's necessary knowledge is, it includes a lot of things, but it includes things like mathematics. So God knows facts, 2 + 2 = 4. All right, God knows truth, such as no circle can be a square. So God knows, this is all God's necessary knowledge. He knows them by necessity. It also includes a knowledge of all possibilities. All right, so that's part of God's necessary knowledge. So God knows everything that could have happened in any possible world by any possible people. This is true. God does have this knowledge. There's nothing he does not know. There's no possibility he does not know. He knows everything completely and immediately. That is called necessary knowledge. And it's something that has been said, or theologians have said for a long time. So then they have a category of God's free knowledge. Free knowledge. In God's free knowledge, this is of his knowledge of his decree and what he has ordained. Okay? So, out of all the possibilities that he knows could possibly happen, his free knowledge is the one that he actually chose to come to pass. All right? It's his free knowledge because he freely chose, God has freely chosen what will happen. And so that is called his free knowledge. Necessary, free. I know it's a bit confusing, because now we're about to insert one in the middle, called middle knowledge. That's why it's called middle knowledge. And it's somewhere between these. And so what happened was, in the late 1500s, as a way to work out the problems of free will and predestination, they said, we need another category of knowledge, one that's in the middle, where I can retain libertarian free will, and I can retain God's predestination. So I need a middle knowledge that I can apply to God. So that's Molinism. All right, so I know this, it may not make a bunch of sense. So here's a visual that is often associated with Molinism, and it's may make things worse, I'll be honest. So I'm sorry if that's true.
So you have three. All right, imagine all of these as worlds.
So you have possible worlds, feasible worlds, and actual worlds. So possibly in a world we could conceive of, I was 8 feet tall. All right, so that's possible worlds. And there's a lot of these. Where I was 8 feet tall, could dunk a basketball, and everything was better. Okay, that's possible worlds. Feasible worlds is I am not 8 foot tall. That could not happen. It's not even feasible. There's less of these. Things that could actually have been. All right? And then actual is one. There's only one actual world. All right? So this is what a Molinist says, that God chose the actual world based on what creatures decided to do. So, in other words, he knew all the possibilities of every choice of every free person that could have ever been, ever. He knew all of those free choices. He saw which one fit his plan the best and which one was feasible, and then he chose that world to exist. Where are we at? I can't tell. I mean, I'm getting some strange looks up here, I'll be honest.
So you're saying, sorry, instead of him making the world how he wanted it to be,
right,
he chose the world that was closest to what he wanted it to be out of many options?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, so he saw everything that was possible, everything that was feasible, and he said, this aligns the best with what I want to do, what I want to bring about. And so in it, you retain God's sovereignty over everything, and also, that is what we chose. It was a possibility. Yeah.
So it's almost as if you can picture God makes an infinite number of simulations of what happens. The world presses play on all of them, watches them through, and he says, okay, I like this one the best. Right.
Yep.
So like the analogy I always like to use is the game Plinko on The Price is Right, right, where you drop a puck on top of the pegs and it bounces down off different ones. God played that system infinitely, and he picked the one path that he liked the best, and that's the actual world we live in. So that humans made free choices within that world, but then God sovereignly chose which one of those worlds he wanted.
So would that mean they would think that there could have been a different Jesus?
Okay, so this is actually very similar to the question I had when I heard this. I was like, in what way is it possible if it's not actual? We're getting some weird philosophy stuff. But no, there could not have been.
So they would even say, no, couldn't have been a different Jesus.
No, no. There was only one world that was actually going to happen because God chose that world to happen. There's no other way it could have happened. I didn't say that. I didn't say that there was possible, feasible, and actual.
It's like the end of the Marvel movies where Doctor Strange watches all the... Exactly. Okay. So much clear.
You should play that clip.
I haven't seen the Marvel movies.
Oh.
So...
We're working on it. That's not required watching for the interns.
You need to watch them for next time you teach it.
Yes. Thank you. So, back to the chess analogy. It gets a little funny here, but here God saw all the possible moves of his opponents and they could have made, and he just chose the game where he wins the most efficiently and everybody retains their choices and it works out like that. So for them, God knows a bit more than simple foreknowledge. It's not simple foreknowledge. It is more than simple foreknowledge. He doesn't simply know. He also chose what would happen, but it's a choice based on our free choices we make as individuals. So problems with this, one, I find it confusing. It does get a bit confusing, and it was created in the late 1500s, which isn't always a bad thing, but it seems like there was a problem that the Bible presents, and they couldn't get out of it unless they had a new category. It's kind of the way it comes across sometimes. For that reason, I don't see a need for a third kind of knowledge. I don't see how God's necessary knowledge and his free knowledge lacks anything. I don't like the third category there too much. It seems like more of a maybe like a speculative concept of God's knowledge that's used to get out of supposed problems. However, I don't think the problems are actually problems, nor do I think this would be the way out of them. So, and like I said, I think that if someone says, you know, I understood God's knowledge in an Arminian type of way, I think more often than not, they mean this. They don't mean that God has a simple foreknowledge and he's helpless to watch the future. That is not, I don't think that's a fair way to understand that or to think about what maybe an Arminian may say. I think what they mean is God sees the future and he also somehow chose the future. It's like, how does that work out? Well, I think it's, this is, if you were to flesh it all out, I think that's typically how it would go. Any questions on that so far?
It seems like these are kind of faux categories because if God is the one who created all things, which he is, and he designed and made us to be the creatures that we are, the world that it is, and everything in it, heavens, earth, I mean, even if you want to say that you have some sort of libertarian free will, if he's chosen this actual world, well, do you really?
Yes.
Is that really even a legitimate category?
That's right. So, if
we're going to do everything that we were going to do for that actual endpoint to take place.
That's right. Actually, yeah, I'm glad you said that. I meant to say that. Yeah, so I think another critique you would put maybe with the classical Arminian position is, if God knows what's going to happen and there's nothing that can change that could happen, so let's say God knew that I was going to drop this marker, in what way can I not drop the marker, right? And if that's the case, do I really have a free choice to make? Because it's going to happen. Yeah, that's a common critique. Thank you for bringing that up. All right, we're going to get to the last one, and then we'll have some more time for these questions. The last one is classical theism, or theist understanding. Or also evangelical Calvinism. All right, so what does this position assert? Two things. God knows all things because he knows himself. So, he knows himself. God knows all things because he knows himself. And secondly, God foreordains all things. I think I spelled foreordains wrong. Maybe I didn't. Feels wrong. So God knows all things because he knows himself, and then God foreordains all things. So God knows everything that has happened and everything that will happen perfectly because he is sovereign over all things, everything. So whenever I say that God knows all things because he knows himself, part of knowing himself is knowing his will and his decree. So I'm not going to flesh those out in this class, but he knows his will for the world, and he also knows what he has ordained, what he has decreed to come to pass from the beginning to end. He knows himself, that decree and that will. So because he knows himself and he knows those things, he knows all things that will happen. Does that make sense? How a God who knows himself knows all things? Does that make sense concerning the future? A little bit. So he has ordained all things that have come to pass, and then he knows all things that will come to pass because he knows everything completely, immediately in himself. In himself. So I think that this is how the Bible speaks, and I think this is how a classical theist understanding of God's omniscience, how God knows all things. I think it makes the most sense when you take into the account of the other doctrines, such as God's simplicity, immutability, aseity, those type of things that we've discussed. Any questions about this one? And then I think there are some problems that we can bring up. All right, so problems. There's two main ones, I think, that are put on this type of understanding of God's knowledge. One, does this impede human freedom? Do we actually have a choice? if God has ordained all that comes to pass, all that will come to pass. So I answered, no, we always do what we want most, right? You've never not been able to do what you desire to do the most. You can always do what you want to do most. That is free will. Now, if we were in another class, we were going to talk about human freedom and salvation and those types of things. We can make distinctions about different kinds of free will. But the way I understand free will to be is you do what you most desire. And we always do that. And the second thing is that God, that the Bible definitely speaks of us having responsibility for what we do. So in that way, we are 100% free in that we always do what we want most and we're held responsible for our actions, thoughts, and so on. So no, I don't think it impedes human freedom. The second one, and this is the one that was mentioned earlier, is the problem of evil. This is the one where people are going to say, you make God the author of evil, because you say God has ordained all things that come to pass. And yes, I agree, evil is a problem, and we should be done there. But it is more complicated than that, and we don't have time to flesh it all out. But I'll say this, I don't think that the problem of evil is specific to this view of God's knowledge. I still think that in these three, I think you have problems to wrestle with. I think that there have been a lot of great theologians who have worked through this, worked through the problem of evil from a classical understanding of who God is, and they've made good sense out of it, given the Bible's limited, you know, speaking of how evil came into this world. It doesn't give us every detail about everything. It tells us what it tells us. And so I think that there have been theologians who held this, who have worked through it really well, and I think it makes sense, as much sense as any other position that it's going to offer you. This is one that, this is how I understand God's knowledge to be. Maybe you don't, and that's fine. And we can, you know, talk about it over coffee and hang out and just be friends still. That's fine. But that's how I understand God's knowledge to be. There are problems that people are going to accuse, but those are the two main ones. And those are the way, just very simply, I would answer them. All right, any question?
So, how would the Roman Catholics view God's understanding of knowledge and wisdom?
I don't actually fully know. I know it's somewhere maybe between 2 and 3. You know, Isaac?
I mean, Molinism was created by...
I mean, like a modern day...
A monk. A Catholic.
Yeah.
Priest or something. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. They fall somewhere in that spectrum.
2 and 3, yeah, like I said several times, people say, I'm an Arminian. They mean they're Molinist. Some Molinists probably mean the opposite. These two get very mixed up. I think very few people are actual true classical Arminians.
Oh, so within the Roman Catholic Church, they have institutional unity, but they have doctrinal diversity.
Yeah.
So you're going to find, I'm sure you find classical theist Catholics, but you probably also find open theist Catholics.
Yeah, and they still get along.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, at least outside.
It seems like there's all kinds of different variations that people come up with, viewing how they weigh different portions of scripture. But I mean, I've even heard arguments of, and this is just an example to try to bring it home, but like if the Corps of Engineers was going to direct a river, well, they're concerned about point A and point B, and not so much concerned about whatever happens along that path between point A and point B, as long as point A and point B hold true. So I assume that there's probably some variants out there that would say, well, yes, God is in control, and he, you know, this is what's important to him, so he's going to make sure that point A to point B happens. If anything outside of that, like let's say in the Old Testament where he was very focused on Israel as being his people, well, did he really care what took place amongst the other tribes that were out there that, you know, were off in the distance, you know, not trying to trick the Israelites with old wineskins and worn-out shoes.
Yeah, that's right.
So this may be more like semantics, but, or it may sound like that, but in my mind it's very different. You know, you're saying that like Molinism or classical Arminianism, they hold on to this idea of, you know, what can we do because we have to retain this idea of free will. But what if it's, I mean, how can you reconcile sin not being, I mean, and I'm not just talking about what if evil happens in the world, but sin, like personal sin that you are responsible for that separates you from God. Like, God separated himself from us then, if there's not, does that make
maybe.
Sense? And,
keep going a little bit.
And maybe part of what I might not be able to reconcile this with is because I'm really struggling to understand, so necessary and middle knowledge, I think I can kind of wrap my mind around, but free knowledge, could you explain that one more
time? Yeah, okay. So free knowledge would be what God has ordained to come to pass, what he has said will happen. He knows that because God freely chose to do this thing, to make it happen. So that is his free knowledge that he's chosen to happen.
So that's like a self-awareness almost. Like he knows
sort of.
What he has ordained to happen?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you can almost say this in his ordaining, that is free knowledge. I know that's kind of strange, but I think that's how it works. Yeah.
So would all those positions say free knowledge exists?
Open theism can't.
Yeah, open theism can't. I would imagine that these two would. I don't actually know about the classical Arminian how they would say that. I would think yes. I think they would say that God has free knowledge. I just don't know in what way you actually have it. Yeah.
If I can add, I think, so the classical theism says God's free knowledge is the things that will definitely happen because he's ordained that they'll take place,
yeah.
Right? So he knows what he wants to happen, and he's going to see to it that it happens. Those ones can't be so strong. The other three can't be so strong that they're, God might have a plan. I'd like this to happen, but that plan is contingent on other people doing what I hope they'll do.
Which to
so
me
we can't say, I'll
kind of ruins
happen.
Free knowledge.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes it a wish.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So then back to the sin thing. So if we all like sheep have gone astray, you know, so if he's the creator and having all knowledge of himself, that includes all knowledge of all things that he's created and all properties of the things that he has created and how they will respond. And, you know, he's going to know like how he created us in such a way that we would go astray.
Yeah, I think that's the punch that a lot of people in this camp may not know how to absorb, but it does get confusing.
I'm doing it right, because I'm confused. So then we're doing this right, because I'm confused.
So I think that, you know, the best thing we can do is speak like the Bible speaks on this, and it says that God has ordained all things that come to pass, yet we are fully responsible for our actions, that it is our fault that we are sinful. God is not to blame in any action. And I think we just have to hold those things. And that's how the Bible speaks, so I say we speak the same way. Something I think Lee recently said is, apply the biblical doctrines in a biblical way. And I think if you do that, that's where you come out. Also note one more thing. So a classical theist, this is where I stand, and I would certainly say we have free will. What I will not say is we have libertarian free will, which is where these three would land. The difference is, libertarian free will says, I can do X or I cannot do X. Always. I can not do X or I could do X. So I could or I could not drop this marker. It is totally a free choice. Free will, as I understand it to be, is I always do what I want to do the most. So if I want to drop this marker, I'm going to do it. If I don't, then I won't. That does not mean that I actually could or couldn't. I know, and we're going to
get... Well, and that's the argument.
We're
going to
get into
some
strange things.
They're like, but God gave you those desires, so really, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, and this is why you really need to take a systematic class.
So back to her question, though, in these categories, though, I mean, there's people that are truly believers, they just don't necessarily have the right understanding of God.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
So I feel like the open theism is the one that's a little more like, I don't know,
we're just talking about the open theist position on knowledge. If you get an open theist position, like other, we're in some really dangerous
territory. Well, but the ones that believe this on the knowledge and wisdom usually end up going with all the things.
This category is, like, I don't want to say this, like, this is a little different. Yeah, this is a little different. This is a little different. This one's, it's very different. It's very different. We're in a different place when we're talking about open theism. Yeah. All right, any other questions? I'll say one thing about God's wisdom, and I'll take...
What denomination would be like an open theism? Like, where do you find these people at?
Maybe more in like hippie camps.
The far side of the UMC. probably embrace things like this.
Universal?
PC USA.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Where else?
Unitarian Universalist?
Yeah, they probably love this thing.
Yeah.
So on God's wisdom, I'll just say this. God always chooses the best ends and the best means. The ultimate best end being his own glory. And I was going to look at two texts in Romans. Romans 8, 26 through 30. Romans 8, 26 through 30. And then Romans 11, 33 through 36. So God always chooses the best ends and the best means. Always. It's always the best. He is wise. Infinitely wiser than we can possibly understand. So, you know, when we talk about God's knowledge, if you start to get this, like, you know, worried feeling about God not doing the right thing, just go ahead and eliminate that and know that God is so wise. He is the wisest. Always the best means, always the best ends. There's nothing greater that could ever happen. Regardless of what you think, feel, whatever, you have to say that that is true about God's wisdom.
What was the scripture? Romans 8, 26 through 30, and then...
Romans 11, 33 through 36. It talks about the best end being his glory, and then how he brings all things happen for the good of his people. Yeah. All right, any other questions? Maybe time for like two more. One more. And I know, that, like I said, this probably prompts a bunch of questions about God's will and human freedom. And if you were to take a systematic class, you would work through this systematically, and you would get to it in the right time. This class is about classical theism. So, you know, we're just trying to understand who God is and the way he is. And so part of that is knowledge. And so this is how we have to kind of break it down. And I know it's maybe unhelpful in certain areas, but pertaining to knowledge, I hope it was helpful.
One more quick question.
Yeah.
So if you have the thinking that even like you can change your death when you die according to how you exercise, eat, like what would that fall in? Would that fall in open theism? Because basically it's all about your choices, right?
I would say classical theism. Like if I, for example, if I were to jump off a building, I'm going to die. That is the thing that I choose to do. And God, I mean, if God, you know, decides to miraculously save me, that's fine. But if I do that, I did what I most desire, and that means God planned for me to die.
Well, I'm saying though, if someone says they believe our days aren't numbered,
aren't numbered
because we have the choice to do things that would potentially
increase or decrease your life.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, God planned what you would eat, and he planned the way, if you would exercise, if you would not, if you would do this, if you would
right.
do this.
So if they believe the way I just said, what kind of, I mean, because I feel like I know many Arminianism, whatever, millennium, that would not believe that. They still believe your days are numbered, even though you make choices.
Honestly, you may find people in every one of these camps who would say something like that.
Really?
But specifically, I'd say 2 and 3 would probably be more where we're at with that one. But I think if I eat terrible and don't exercise and do really risky, dangerous things, I'll probably die sooner too. But I also think that God ordained every aspect
yeah.
of that to happen.
Well, and I think these categories, these boxes, like they're human constructs.
That's right.
Like we're trying to categorize things in a way that we can wrap around our mind around and understand them. But like nobody, if you really get down to the nitty-gritty and like define every single tiny little element of it, probably nobody is going to say, oh, I agree with everybody and I
yeah.
perfectly fit into this box.
That's right.
You know, it's nuanced and the brain sorts for relevance.
Yeah.
We're trying to sort things.
That's right. The thing that I love about this position the most is I think it speaks like the Bible and it says what is true of God. It doesn't try to make God to be a man like me. It makes God God. It speaks like him in the way the Bible does. And so the issues that you have, like the problem of evil, you got to work through them. But it's not because we've created this, like, we don't want to work everything out. We want to speak like the Bible does, say who God is because who he is, and then just have faith.
That's a good word. We shouldn't try to fight somebody to get him in our box. We should talk about the Bible. We should help them know Jesus,
yeah.
and we should know Jesus better ourselves. That's a good word.
Any other questions?
Yeah, it just seems like an underlying heart issue is with 1, 2, and 3 is you're trying to rectify something within yourself that you don't like. So I want to be in control. Well, that means that God must not be in control. So you're trying to find ways to satisfy a desire or a problem that you have within yourself.
Yeah.
While the Bible may not, you know, support that, you're going to try to view it through lenses that does try to make your view sit well with you.
Yeah, I will say there are good Arminians who will accuse classical theists of the same thing. Mm-hmm. They say that you can't deal with, you know, thinking this, so you've attributed this to God to just get out of your problems that you have. Yeah, I don't think there's as much merit with those, but they definitely, people will say the exact same thing, yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of scripture, obviously, to support the fourth one. And one of my favorites, because I deal with friends who think that anything bad that happens to them is from the devil, it's evil. And I'm just not really sure about that. But Isaiah 45:7 says, "There is no one beside me, I am the Lord, and there is no other. The one forming light and creating darkness, causing well-being and creating calamity. I am the Lord who does all these."
That's good. Thank you for reading that. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right. I apologize for the bad parts. I hope you enjoyed the good parts. Next week, we're going to talk about God's goodness, mercy, love, justice, all those mushy things that are really awesome and true of God. And I'm just going to do it so it's not going to be mushy. yeah, so only 2 more weeks of the Sunday school class. That is all. Thank you.